You're listening to the Deeply Graphic Design Cast, the show about all things design, from the creative side to the business side and all points in between. Follow the show on Twitter at Wes McDowell. Want the gang to answer your question on an upcoming episode? Send in your listener question to questions@thedeependesign.com or via Twitter using hashtag DGDC. Here are your hosts.
Wes McDowell in Chicago.
Mikkel Morrison in Seattle.
Nick Longo in Los Angeles.
All right, all three of us back together again this time. We missed you last time, Mikkel.
Sorry.
Of course.
Reunited and it feels so good.
Reunited and it feels okay, I guess. But,
we have, yeah, but, we're just 2 seconds in.
Right. Okay, so before we get started, I do want to remind you guys to, because there's a problem on iTunes that I can't seem to fix with the feed where I think it only shows about the last 100 episodes or so. Mm-hmm. So if you ever have a hankering for the back episodes, back in the early days when we knew what we were doing even less than we do now, you can, or the pre-Nick.
Yeah.
That's good. Because if you are a Nick hater,
go back
to the beginning.
That's why I tell,
before
that's
him,
that's
and
what
you'll
I
love
tell
everybody.
I tell my students that. I'm
just
like,
kidding.
If you want some real nuggets of information,
yeah,
you got to go back to the first few years.
Yeah, back in the beginning. But so the way you do that is you'd go to thedeependesign.com and then you'd go to the podcast tab and just go there and you got to scroll all the way down and you can find the old ones that way. So they're there. They just don't show up in the feed. So
Apple.
Anyway.
Crazy.
What's up? What's up, you guys? We're recording this on a Friday again and we got the Friday juices going.
Yeah,
going on?
I like that.
I feel
my
it,
mom
right?
is on her way down to have like an afternoon visit, and she goes, "Can I listen to today's episode live in the car on my way?"
Yes, we're on the we're on NPR, mom.
Oh my god,
moms don't understand podcasting.
No,
it's okay.
No, it's it. That was.
I think
total,
my mom still
Facebook
thinks it's some
question,
kind of a.
Don't you think?
Yeah.
Yeah,
my mom has to ask every time. She's like, "What's this podcast again?" I think they think it's like some kind of a online photo gallery or something.
My friends asked, they're like, "Wait, I don't understand it. I listened the other day and they're in other cities. Where do you guys meet to do the podcast?" I'm like, "Are you kidding me?"
Iowa.
Yeah, just right dab in the middle of the country.
That's where
Isn't
all
that
the podcasts
funny?
Meet.
People are funny. What, I just, audio mom, really similar to radio show, but releases after the show.
And not live,
right.
Unless we are.
That's the only way that I've figured out how to explain it. It's just.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm
you people listening don't need to podcast
because you're
pros. Explain to you because you're
pros.
Here. But
just laugh along with
exactly.
us.
Exactly. But something exciting. So Mikkel and I are going to meet up in person tomorrow night.
Whoa. Very cool, guys.
Yeah.
Are you in her
so
neck
I'm
of the woods?
I am going to be in Seattle. Yeah. This is where I gay out. So I basically, I got tickets to go see Romy and Michelle's High School Reunion, the musical world debut at the Fifth Avenue Theater in Seattle. So,
and why would your girlfriends turn that down? So okay. I'm in.
Exactly.
It's a, Mikkel
was there for me. So
it's a play?
Yeah. Oh. It's a musical based on, so a little bit of, I mean, this is going to bore all the people that aren't into theater, but Fifth Avenue Theater is one of the places where pre-Broadway musicals will go to work out the kinks before they go to Broadway. So
right.
Like Hairspray debuted
Precursor.
There, Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah.
Aladdin debuted. There are a lot of big ones that went on to Broadway
cool.
started at that theater.
Cool.
So we'll be some of the first ones to see it, and we'll report back next
Damn.
Time.
I think a little live coverage to add to the end of this episode might be, maybe your reviews. That you should do that.
We will.
Okay.
We'll add a little something to the Instagram. So be sure to follow us on Instagram.
Oh my god,
Deeply
Graphic. I want to see drunk reviews.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll post some good stuff there.
Oh,
for
please
sure.
Do.
Pressure.
I'm on it.
So what's
the
up?
Funny thing about saying the pressure is that there's no pressure for that at all. It's terrible.
Oh, we'll be drunk regardless.
Yeah,
so
not a problem.
Oh my
god. What about you, Nick? What are you up to this weekend or what's going on with you?
It's a work-free weekend, I think. I'm hoping. I got, like, fingers crossed.
Very good.
Things are good. Like, it's the weather's kind of nice, so school's out. The funniest thing is it does feel a little like summer break, you know, when you teach, and it's kind of cool. But, like, I've all the things I've been wanting to, like, little things around the house, like I'm having the bathrooms redone, all these, like, cool little things, because I'm like, I could be home for this. This is awesome. This is where I love having my own business.
Yeah. No, there's something to be said about how you can kind of rearrange things.
Yeah. Or be there when someone's like, oh, we can only be there from this out. Well, I'm like, I could be there at that window.
Isn't that cool?
Just fire up the home office and be good. So I'm just trying to get things done, man. It feels great.
Yeah.
But it's been really
good. And for all the 20-year-olds listening, this is what it feels like to be an adult, what Nick just described. That this is adulting.
Yeah. That's fine. Installing shower doors on a weekend. Yes. Yeah. That's awesome.
That's living. That's life in the fast lane.
That's living with an apostrophe. Yeah.
Exactly.
How about you? So
you know what else is living?
I was going to ask, are you taking off tonight to head over to?
Yes, tonight.
Good deal.
You cut off my brilliant segue. Sorry, man. But yes, leaving tonight. Was originally going to go first thing in the morning, but I fly standby. My mom's a flight attendant. I don't know if I've mentioned that before, but
take advantage, baby.
So I always have to. I have to be very creative with the flights I take.
Good
so
for you, man. That's going
to
be
red
awesome.
Eye. Yeah, red eye to the. Except red eyes don't really work from east to west.
No,
you basically just end up getting there in the middle of the night versus in the morning. So. Yeah. God bless my friend Mia, who's picking me up at 2:30 a.m. So
you know who else is there?
Good
at
girl, Mia. Good girl.
Yeah, and you know who else? God blesses is Skillshare.com, baby.
They're there at 2 a.m. every morning.
Yeah, they're there. No, no joke. Like if you want to learn something at 2:30 a.m. or 3:30
or on a plane,
anytime,
maybe
you are up in brain absorbing mode. You're gonna go to Skillshare.com. It's an amazing platform just to learn new things. So just for instance, I just saw a really cool class on there called Designing Logos That Evolve, which caught my eye because it just looks super interesting to be able to design a logo that can change over the years in a thoughtful way.
Yeah.
Because you know you're going to, every logo you design, you know it's going to be changed anyway, but this kind of, it's built in, like it gives you that framework to do that. So, you know, if you're listening to the show, you're obviously looking to keep learning. So you can be a more marketable designer and make more money. So Skillshare is perfect for you. It's an online learning community with over 15,000 classes in graphic design, illustration, how to run your business, all that good stuff. And you can learn everything from logo design to visual thinking to more, you know, just artistic endeavors such as painting, that kind of thing. Classes are perfect for the professional designer like you looking to get a leg up at work, or the freelancer who wants to attract more clients and build their brand. And Skillshare teachers, this is great, include working designers with actual experience. It's not that 15-year-old kid
YouTube video in his basement.
YouTube, which has got the techno music blaring and nothing, no words. But some of the teachers are, you know, Debbie Millman and Aaron Draplin. One of your favorites, Nick.
There you go.
So
that's
he's
cool.
Got a whole bunch of classes on there.
Yeah.
And you can get unlimited access to all this for a low monthly price and never pay per class again, which is great. You know, and I'm putting together a few new videos for my site, and I found a class on there specifically about creating a 1-minute content marketing video.
That's really good.
Yeah. I mean, it's great how they drill down and just teach you how to do exactly what you need to learn. There's really something for everyone here. So anyway, Skillshare is giving our listeners a month of unlimited access absolutely for free. Can't beat free. So go to skillshare.com/graphic to redeem your free month. Again, that is skillshare.com/graphic. And just go and learn some stuff.
Nice.
Like we do. All right, cool. So this episode is going to be a bit of a piggyback to last week. We talked about, you know, SEO knowledge that the designer should know when designing a website. You should kind of bake it into the process. And this time, as we kind of teased last time, we're going to talk about ways to optimize mobile websites, not just from an SEO point of view, but just all around to make it a good user experience. Because I don't know if you've read the latest stats, but basically they're saying mobile accounts for anywhere from 50 to 70% of all internet browsing. And when you talk about B2C sites, you know, business to consumer sites, that number jumps to about 85%.
Wow.
So
isn't that crazy?
It needs to be a priority. Yeah. You know, mobile optimization, as we'll talk about, falls into two basic categories that we'll talk about. User experience is one, meaning just it has to be a nice experience for the user that doesn't make them want to kill themselves. And then page load speed makes a big difference as well.
Yeah.
So we've got kind of a checklist here. of a bunch of different things you'll want to keep in mind as you design these mobile sites. You know, and there's a little bit of, it really is going to depend on the site and who the end user of the site is. You can kind of tell through research which sites are going to be more, that should have more of a desktop focus.
Yeah.
Versus more of a mobile focus. Yeah. So let's just put that into context for a second. So let's say for instance, I keep coming back to one of my sites that I'm designing for a client now, about to go live. It's for an insurance company. Mm-hmm. Their end user, it's a B2B site. So their clients are businesses. So that right there, like, people are not going to be looking for their insurance provider via mobile that much.
Yeah.
They might kind of do some initial research that way, but when it comes time to actually pull the trigger, they're most likely going to be on desktop. So for that, you probably want a desktop first approach.
Yeah.
But then I'm designing another site that's much more B2C, where it's kind of an e-commerce site. And I know who the end user of this is, which is primarily, you know, women from 25 to 35. That's going to be heavy on mobile, especially since we're directing people there a lot through Facebook ads.
Yeah, and that's where they're going to be to begin with on mobile.
Exactly. So, right. So we know going in that we need to probably take a mobile first approach with it. Things to keep in mind. You know, so let's just go down the list here and we'll talk about it. And you guys feel free to stop me and ask questions as you want.
Sure.
Yeah. So the first kind of category here would be basic mobile optimization. So the first thing to talk about is responsive design. So, and I'm sure you all know about this, it's basically that where a website will kind of naturally break down from more complex to more simple and fit
that
the
translation.
Window.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Google, there's many different ways of making a mobile website. Actually, there's only like three, but one of them involves making a totally different site that kind of redirects to the mobile site, which is kind of, you don't really need that.
Mm-hmm.
What Google actually recommends is the responsive route. So it basically just degrades nicely and hopefully gracefully as you go down into smaller and smaller windows. So keep that in mind. And as you're designing, you're going to want to, you know, what I do, I don't design for all the different breakdown points, but I do design for desktop and then mobile. And then my developer is usually pretty good at kind of coming up with that, those midpoints.
The in-betweens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'd love to see some stats about iPads these days, by the way.
I
feel like I don't see them as much anymore.
Well, I think you're right.
Yeah,
I think
tablets in general. Yeah.
And now that, like, I got to admit, I've switched to the 7 Plus, and I was always with the smaller iPhone, but I'm using my iPad a lot less because this thing is right in
between. I found that to be the case, too.
You know? Yeah. And my iPad is literally for presentations now. And it's funny how...
Interesting.
So I think the mobile... And then plus the mobile is with you all the time, and I think the iPad is... with people all the time. So maybe the numbers are true. I'd love to see them too and where a tablet is right now. Hmm. You know? Interesting. Hmm.
Yeah, I just feel like I see people using them less. So I generally, and maybe I'm completely wrong, but I tend to not really focus too much on what's this gonna look like exactly on an iPad. Cause I just
Me neither.
My developer figures out those in between.
Very seldom.
Parts, but,
yeah.
And I've noticed too a lot more sites now. It used to be a mobile site would almost magnify on iPads or tablets, whereas now a lot of times, I'm assuming this is because of HTML and everybody's finally gotten off of Flash. Sometimes an iPad browsing looks just as good, if not the same exact, as the desktop. You know, it's not that it's not that bigger magnified mobile looking site. It's actually full featured, and so I think it almost. It almost is categorized as desktop in a lot of ways, probably. And that's why mobile is still so separate.
Yeah, well, it depends. I will say that I can see, like, I don't ever look at my sites that I design on an iPad, but you can kind of simulate it by making the browser window smaller. And I can definitely see a shift when it gets to about that tablet size.
And then
things
boom.
Will do a bit of shifting.
Yeah.
It's not quite as small as it is for mobile, but... It's a middle ground. So, and I think there does need to be some kind of a difference, because I think, you know, it's
as far as
if it's just the interface. Desktop, if it's just the desktop getting smaller, it might not look right. And if it's the mobile blown up, it might not look right.
Exactly.
So,
yeah. It looks like something's
missing. It's that Goldilocks thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the second thing to talk about is page speed. Now this is important, obviously, because they've done a lot of research and they've said that the average mobile browser will close out if it takes longer than 3 seconds.
And especially because you could see when the progress
people just
bar.
Don't have the patience.
And if that progress bar is stopped, yeah, you're gone. I don't even.
Yeah,
it's on to the next thing.
Yeah.
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 So to keep in mind, when you're on Wi-Fi, it's a different ballgame, but you got to keep in mind they might just be on their data plan.
Yep.
Using it if they're out in the wild somewhere. So it's really got to be really lean and mean to load quickly, no matter where they are, with reasonable expectations. Like every time I go on like a lake vacation, there's absolutely no.
Nothing.
There's no saving a site there. Yeah. But you know, if when in town, when in city, it should be able to work. And so things like that we talked about last week, make sure the images are smaller. Make sure you're not using a whole lot of animations and stuff that kind of bogs it down. These are the biggest things to think about. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing is hosting speed, and that makes a difference. So these days I'm not really sure who the really shitty hosts are. I feel like everyone's probably
there.
Stepped up their ball game a little bit.
Yeah.
But if you're noticing that your site is loading slowly, you might want to look at this or have your developer or whoever look at the host side and make sure everything's loading.
Yeah, I had a friend that his website, every time I went to it for some inspiration or whatever, it had and he had two or three different sites, and I knew they must have been with the same hosting thing. There was like a 3 or 4 second lag, and I brought it to his attention, and he went and changed his host, and that completely eliminated the issue right off the bat.
And I just
thought it was too common that like all three of his sites did that same thing. So it must have been, and I think that's the interesting point about everything you're talking about in these first three is we're almost used to them when they work perfectly now. You only, you don't like applaud anybody anymore for being really fast because that's what it should be. The only thing you do is you highlight when something's really slow,
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But, and I think most of the hosts have kind of worked out their kinks because I remember back in the day, it was a lot of talk of 99% uptime, but, and I think a lot of hosts still kind of tout that, but I've not noticed how often do you go to a website where it's down?
I know.
Very, very rarely.
Yeah. That's their main issue. That's like the biggest problem they always say is we never want to be down. That's what you hear them say. That's their commitment. So you're right.
Well, yeah, particularly if you've got a client who's making big time e-commerce sales.
Shit. Yeah.
Every minute they're down, may be losing millions, So.
Oh my gosh.
And then you might get sued. So don't do that.
It's so funny that you brought this up because I just, and maybe this can be saved for a different conversation. I just am in the process of revising my business insurance for that liability protection because now I'm shifting into more clientele that's requesting host management.
Yeah.
Web host management.
Oh, okay. And you're on the line for that.
Right. It's my ass if the site goes down.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Insure up. Lawyer up.
Yeah, right. And sign here, please.
Exactly.
Yeah.
All right, cool.
Anyway,
so
sorry for that.
It's good. So the next main thing is going to be homepage and site navigation. So the first item under that is keep calls to action front and center. So this is a good user experience kind of thing. So as we all know, the call to action is the most important part of any web page. That we know that now in 2017. That's every page should have one single goal, and that's the call to action. So what I like to do on mobile is I do this for almost every client, including my own site. I like to have a fixed footer on mobile that doesn't take up too much vertical real estate. It's pretty understated, but it should be a bright color.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't forget it's there, but as they scroll down the page, they can always click that button. So whenever they've got enough information to finally be motivated to click it, it's right there.
Got it.
So that's just the way I like to do it. But I'm sure there are other ways you could keep it in the header. I like the footer. I like, because I think your thumb is just kind of naturally right there.
Yeah, if you are scrolling, you know? It's closer to the bottom, I would say, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
Just a little pro tip, and don't again, make sure it's brightly colored and it doesn't blend in with the background. The CTA is never a time to be subtle and you know, what's the word? Like delicate, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Keep menus short and sweet. So, basically you're going to, whenever I do a mobile menu, it's usually in that little hamburger icon at the top right of the header. So what you're going to want to put in there is all the main menu items that, so when we think about normal desktop navigation, we always want to have a main navigation and a secondary. So the only put the things in the main navigation that are truly relevant to conversions. You don't need to put the privacy policy up there. Yeah. You don't need to
its own pillar, you mean, right?
Right. And I don't even like to put too much stuff in the header. I like to put, ideally, you actually put nothing in the header. Ideally, it's like a landing page. Like that's the train I'm on these days, is you want to have enough information on that page to properly persuade. But if you must have a navigation, just keep it to the bare minimum essentials up there.
Yeah.
And that's basically the same kind of stuff you're going to want to have in that mobile menu. And if you want to have everything, you have to list it in a hierarchy from most important at the top to, and if they're going to have to scroll down, like it shouldn't be anything that they need to get to down there.
How do you feel about the sub menus?
It's fine. It's a little trickier on mobile.
Well, yeah, just because you're right.
Because everything, you know, when I do a mobile menu, it's pretty much all in line.
Yes.
Like underneath. So then the way that generally works is, let's say you have a services tab with like all your different services underneath it. So the way it works in mobile is you already have to click once to get to see the menu.
Yeah.
Then you have to click services. And then from there, the choices drop down, which is fine.
Yeah.
But sometimes there's no way around that. But the thing is, if let's say you have that same menu on desktop, let's say on your main navigation you have services, and that's got some drop downs underneath it, a sub menu. Then you've got an about us and a contact us. Let's just say it's those three things. What I would like to do on mobile, and I'd like to see you guys do on mobile, is instead of having services and touch it to drop it down, just break out all three or four services in line.
Perfect.
So you just have to go right to what you want.
Yeah, because like you're saying, if you already have to hit that button to get the menu, and then you hit services, and then you get another, it's like it's almost too many clicks just to get to that one area.
Yeah.
So in line.
And it's not the end of the world, but it's just, it's one of those things to think about when you're designing for mobile.
Got it.
You know, don't make them click too much.
Yeah.
All right. So the next thing is make it easy to get back to the homepage. You're dealing with limited real estate on mobile. So either that means breadcrumbs up in usually it's like in the top left, or for the homepage, the best shorthand for that is just the logo.
Logo, right?
So what I do on mobile is I have like a little fixed header usually. Top left is the logo, a small version of the logo, and you tap that, you go to the homepage.
And I think we're
whenever
in the
clients
side.
Ask about the breadcrumb thing, I never know what to say, because doesn't it seem a little outdated now?
Well, it's I don't ever like the look of it.
Purpose
but,
is useful.
Yeah.
You know, but I know, yeah.
I wouldn't say it's outdated, because again, it's all about usability and ease of navigation. Yeah. It does always bump me. It always looks a little like the beginning days of the internet, but
it does.
Until we have a better way of doing it. Again, in a way to get around that, it doesn't work for every site, but again, landing pages, you have people click around as little as possible, and you're not going to have to deal with that as much.
If everything's on that scroll of the landing page.
And it's not always going to work, by the way. Like, that's not always ever going to work.
Yeah, it's a target. And I think, too, I think it's funny how initially we are trained in that way to know that if that logo still exists in the top left corner on a header, I am intuitive to know that that's going to probably bring me back to the homepage. Like, you know what I mean? So I think that's just intuitive now. We think that way, that mm-hmm. that's going to get us mm-hmm. back to the homepage.
Yeah. And I think as time goes on, more and more people are kind of wise to that. So
exactly.
It's same with the hamburger icon. Like it's yep. one of those things that
we're learning.
It people now know what it means, especially on mobile. It's a little iffy on desktop still, but.
Do you still keep a home? If you hit the hamburger icon, is home still on the top of the list in your opinion at that point?
Well, I actually don't do that. And here's why. Here's another reason why too. There's a school of thought that says the homepage is kind of dying.
Got it.
I use it a lot for, it depends on what the purpose is again, but generally like, okay, so it depends on if you have a good SEO purpose or a good way to drive people to the homepage mm-hmm. for a certain thing. But what I like to do generally is have a landing page for everything.
Yeah.
So it's not like as if we really want to get people back to the homepage, but
true.
But this on this list, it does say, you know, give people a quick way to get back to the homepage.
And
so
I think you're right. In a B2C,
differing schools of thought,
a B2C site, you're really never needing to really go back to the home. I think if you are shopping on something or whatever, search is probably the first thing you're going to click on to mm-hmm. If you found something and you put it maybe in your cart, the next thing you're going to do is just hit search, or hopefully some kind of a hierarchy of like where you know, the departments, if that's all you need of where you're shopping on that site. So you're right. Like in a situation like that, I don't think it's really important to go back to the homepage.
Yeah. You know, it just depends on the purpose mm-hmm. of it. Yeah. And, you know, and people do know how to use back buttons. It's not as if you have to. That's another thing, a usability issue that a lot of people bring up as being really crucial. It's like, you don't want people just using, depending on the back buttons. I say, why not? I think it's a perfectly good thing to depend on.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone knows how to use them at this point. So,
yeah.
The internet's been around for a good 25 years, people. Figure it out.
That's the person still on the AOL.com.
Yeah, they're still on the Prodigy. Yeah.
Look that up, kids.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so the next thing is don't let promotions steal the show. So that's a good one. So basically, I'm so sick, and especially on mobile, of when you get to a site mm-hmm. and you get that big pop-up.
The light box?
Right away.
Yeah.
Yeah. The big pop-up right away that wants you to give your email.
I can't stand it either. I can't stand it.
No. I mean, and there's a way to do this properly. Mobile's a little trickier. The only time I ever really like to use one of those pop-ups is an exit intent pop-up, which, so like on desktop, that means they know when you're heading back toward the back button to get out of the website, and then it hits you up with one last offer. Like, hey,
yes,
don't go now. We'll give you this if you stay. Mm-hmm. But on mobile, that doesn't work because there's no cursor scrolling up toward that button.
The interface of it, mm-hmm. it ruins that in a way.
It doesn't work. Yeah. So what they do instead is they just, hey, welcome to our website. Here's a deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is just
e-commerce, you know, more specific. I mean, just, but it's bombarding. It's in your face. Yeah.
And it's obnoxious. Like what I would maybe recommend if you're going to do this. And the thing is like, I would love to see the studies on how this works on mobile. Desktop, those pop-ups actually do kind of work. They increase conversions when used right. I would say if you're going to do it on mobile, maybe use them strategically. Like let's say someone's looking at a product and they've been looking at it for a minute and they're deciding if they want it. Mm-hmm. Maybe then you hit them up with a little something, but
yeah.
mm-hmm.
don't make it a total page takeover. Make it a small pop-up that maybe pops up from the bottom, maybe like not even quite halfway up, and make it easy to kind of swipe to get rid of it. But it's obnoxious when it takes up the whole screen, right?
Yeah. And that
and a lot of like really awesome reputable brands do take up the whole screen. It's shocking.
Yeah. Well, and maybe they've done the math and maybe actually works,
yeah.
but it's still a bad user experience. In my opinion, and there's a better way to do it, you know, by just making it a little less in your face.
Yeah, it's like that douchebag car salesman is even following you online. It sucks.
Yeah. Well, it's like they used to just follow you around the lot. Now they're
Now they're right on your screen.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. So now we were talking about search. Here's the next main topic is all about site search. So the first thing is make site search visible. Mm-hmm. So what this means, what Nick, what you were talking about earlier, one of the most important things for e-commerce especially is to be able to quickly search for what you need. So make sure that that search box is either visible right there or no more than one click away. What I do sometimes is if I know that search is going to be important on a site, what I tend to do is I have an icon that I use that's a combination menu and search icon. So it's basically got the three lines that denote menu, but then it's got a magnifying glass kind of overlaid on top of it. So if you push that, you know that you get the menu and you get a little search box.
Right.
So that's how I do it. You may decide you want to have a search box. And that's not how I would always do it. If it were much more dependent on people searching for products, let's say, I would probably always have that open. I'd probably have that on like the bottom footer or on the header somewhere.
That'd be smart.
Where you don't even have to click to see it.
Yeah. And it, so it's locked as you're scrolling. It's always on the footer.
Or the header, or wherever you decide it should be. Yeah. All right. So the next thing, fairly obvious, make sure that your site search results are relevant. So whatever kind of logic you have to use, there's nothing worse than going on a site and you type in something and there's really nothing for it. So then it just gives you a bunch of shit that maybe it's kind of tangentially related. Yeah. But the better thing to do would say, you know, no search results available, but how about this instead?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's just confusing.
Right.
So, and then the third thing is implement filters to improve site search usability. So let's say for the sake of a product, again, so you have a search box, but, you know, people will type, let's say they're typing in luggage in there. They want to find luggage on Amazon or whatever. But what Amazon does is once those results come up, they allow you to filter through those results to find the best luggage for you. So you can filter based on price, color, size, and it's going to depend on the category, obviously, but providing filters is key. And like, so I just got done with the design phase of an e-commerce site. It's for really high-end, stylish salon shears. So, and there's, as it turns out, I got an education on styling shears. There's like a bunch of different categories of them. And there's a bunch of different price points. They go from like, and this particular company is high end. So their lowest price point is like $250 and it goes up to like $1,700 from there for scissors.
Wow.
So what we had to do is and what they've got is just, you know, 20 different like families of shears. So basically you're looking at all these pictures of different shears. Hmm. So it's like, you're going to look at it and be like, I don't know what I'm looking for. Like that shear looks like that shear.
Yeah. Right.
So what we decided to do is make a filter box on the side that really allows people to find the one for them.
Yeah.
To take the guesswork out. So based on handle type, based on length, because that's important. The length depends on like what kind of use you're using it for. The length matters for that, as it turns out. So giving them lots of different ways to filter, and then, oh, here is your shear for you, the one that you need. So it helps, and it's going to increase conversions for sure if you can kind of direct people that way.
Yeah. I've always think that's the most helpful thing if you're looking at something, like you said, that is a complicated product, and there's so many different things to narrow down in the filter process. And even like, gosh, I mean, Amazon's a perfect example of it, and imagine how much they do that for almost every product they sell. You can search, you can filter that down by brand name, by type, by size, you name it. And you're right. You end up with exactly what you need based on that.
Yeah. And pro tip, if you're ever looking for like a way to handle any of these things, like look to Amazon, look to places like that have invested tens of millions of dollars
in the experience,
into researching.
Yeah.
And it's not the best looking site in the world, but guess what? It doesn't have to be.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah.
And it gives people just an easy experience. So seriously, whenever you're stuck, don't try to reinvent the wheel. Do it the big guys do.
Exactly.
Okay, so the next main topic is about commerce and conversions. So the first one there, and this is a big one, that people kind of don't like to do because they want people to give over their email address. Mm-hmm. They always want them to sign up, but let users purchase as a guest if they so choose to.
Yeah.
Like there are so many times when, you know, I do a lot of online shopping. So the worst thing is if you're in a hurry and they want you to create the account, blah, blah, blah. And it's nice when they like allow you to create an account using Facebook or Google or something like sure. that. That works out pretty well. It's a nice shortcut, but also give them that option to check out as a guest. It's fine. You're like losing out on a bit of a lead there, like a email address you can yeah. market to, but it's better to get that conversion than not.
It's funny how the guest thing, I think, is, I feel like it's probably there for more people who are not too comfortable in online shopping just yet. In a way too, you know, like I think I had always used the guest thing because you just didn't want to, you felt like your credit card might be saved or something, you know yeah. what I mean?
The conspiracy theories.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah. now I get the value in it, specifically if it's a place that you go back to. But I do always, I love when someone does give you that guest thing. You do end up having to put your email in for like that confirmation, but I guess you're not putting in a password, right? It's, you're still a guest, meaning they have not, they don't, you're not going to get bombarded, and always make sure you deselect that, you know, add me to the mailing list. that's always there when you hit guest.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
And so the next thing is use existing information to maximize convenience. So, for instance, there's several ways to do this. Like we were just talking about, there's that plugin that allows you to, have people sign in with their Facebook or with their Google account. Mm-hmm. So that's one way to use their existing information. Another way, which I just did for that same Sheer website, I took a lot of inspiration from the Casper.com checkout process.
They've done a nice job on theirs.
Yeah, it's really nice, and it's the way they make it so convenient is amazing. Basically, what you do is you start typing in your address, and they know where you are. They can kind of figure out your location. So they finish your address for you. Like you start typing your street name and they fill it out, and then you click on it. And then it not only fills out that, but it fills out all the rest of it, the city, the zip code, all that stuff. Mm. So that's just, because think about when you buy online, it's such a hassle typing all that shit out every time.
Yeah.
So,
and then it's like, we know your sleep habits and you need a hard bed. You're like, wait exactly. a minute.
We watch you sleep. But I'm giving my developer notes. We need this. I assume it's a plugin that does that. It's just some kind of navigation tag thing. But whatever that is, we want it. So yeah. that's a great thing to use. The third thing, use click-to-call buttons. So another thing I like to do, remember how I said on the footer, I'll have the CTA, the main CTA. And sometimes if it's the kind of business that they want phone calls, I'll have a little button next to it that says call now, or however you phrase it. So it's just, you click it and it calls
nice.
Them right there.
Yeah.
So they don't have to input a phone number. There are different ways of doing this. Some people just have the phone number in the top right corner of the header, and it's always a link.
Yep.
But if your client wants calls, like let's say you're doing a restaurant website or something like that, or a salon or whatever, yeah, you want that click to call button.
Yeah.
And you want it to be prominent, because in some cases that is your CTA.
Yeah. And I've even noticed in as a business Instagram profile, it has a call shows up on your profile page now as a click to action,
mm-hmm.
which is interesting. So yeah, you're right. I think we're again, this is another thing that we're so in tune with now, is so many people are doing this on the fly that it's a one button to call rather than having to jot down a number or even copy it. You know what I mean? It's like, why not? It should be as easy as that on your phone.
Yeah. What is this, 1997?
Yeah, I know. No, what is this, 2004?
Seriously. We have iPhones
crazy.
Now, man.
Yeah.
Okay, so the last thing for this one is make it easy to finish converting on another device. So this can be tricky, and it won't work for everything. But like I think about a site like Amazon again. So when I'm on Amazon on my phone, I've got the app. But I think if you were to do it on the the web side, it would still work where you're logged in. And I think in order for this to work, the person has to be basically logged into the site.
Yes.
You do. So where you
yes.
can.
That's yeah. the only way that I'm able to use it. I don't have room for the app. So that's exactly what I do.
Yeah. So basically what it does, you can add something to your cart on mobile or on desktop. And then when you go on the other side,
right.
if you were on mobile and it you go to syncs. Desktop, it's still in your checkout.
Right.
Which is great because then it makes it, then they don't have to redo it. So right. whatever plugin that uses, yeah. you should go and get that one. Cause yeah, you're just gonna lose the conversion if
super
you
handy.
Automatically take it out of the cart. Like, you want that stuff to stay in the cart, man.
Yeah, totally.
So Okay, so the next thing is form entry. And the first one there is streamline form entry. So I think it kind of goes hand in hand with what we talked about before, about having things autofill when possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you just want it to, and you want it to be, so when you're doing forms, here's one of the main things to think about, and it should go without saying, but some people have big thumbs. I have very dainty thumbs, so it's not a big problem for me. I have very girly hands, I suppose, but some men have big thumbs that you have to, like, and this goes for buttons and everything too, but what you never want to have happen on a form on mobile is you click it to just fill out, you know, this particular form field, and you end up clicking the other one.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to, what I always do is whatever I have the height for a form field on desktop, I always make it a little bigger for mobile. And I'll test it and I'll just make sure, like, I'll just look at it and make, okay, that seems like about the right height, but you definitely want it to be big enough to be easily clicked. Goes for buttons too. The next thing is choose the simplest input method for each task. So not everything is going to be a form that you have to, a field you have to fill out yourself. There might be ones where you input the text yourself. There'll be dropdowns. Mm-hmm. In some cases, it might be preferable to have, you know, radio buttons or checkboxes.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about what would be the easiest way of inputting this information.
Like a good flow.
And go with that.
Throughout the entire piece, right?
Yeah, like let's say there's one section where you have to make one of two choices. Is it preferable to have a dropdown?
Yeah.
Or is it where they have to click once? And then click again, or is it preferable to have two little options with a checkbox next to it?
Yeah, again, I think we tend to appreciate when you see a really good one that allows you to click through something very fast for the first time. You know,
yeah.
If you're new to the site and it feels, I think as a user, you're a little more confident knowing that I think I answered everything correctly and I didn't miss anything. I hate that thing when you submit and it's like the little red asterisk shows up.
Oh, we're getting to that. We're getting to that. Don't you worry.
Uh-huh.
But before we get to that, we're going to talk about the next thing is provide a visual calendar if you're selecting dates.
Oh, okay.
The worst thing ever, worst user experience, is if you're asking for a date and you have to, and you make the person put it in manually, because they're not going to know what format you want.
Oh yeah, because
they're not going to.
It's either a backslash or a dash, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And again, with the errors, we'll get to that, but that could trigger an error. Or it's just, or if it doesn't trigger an error, you know, your client is just getting this mishmash of date types coming in. So it's always good just to have that little calendar pop up. And what I like to do with a calendar is usually provide 2 months in one view.
There you go.
And then arrow over to get to the rest of the months, so on and so forth. So, and now we get to the form errors part. So you're going to want to minimize form errors as much as possible. And actually this goes for desktop too. This is not just for mobile. There's nothing worse, like you said, than when you fill out a form and you get the red error thing. So what you're going to want to do is make it as kind of pre-formatted as possible. That's where that calendar comes in. So the date format's always the same. Or if it's a birthday, you're going to want to just have choices rather than typing it out yourself. If it's a phone number, you should just require, it should be pre-formatted to where, like, you know how you've seen when you type in a phone number, it'll just automatically add those,
yes,
the parentheses and the dash. So all they have to type in is just the numeric numbers and they can see that happening. And the other thing that goes along with this too, and this is particularly crucial on mobile, is if there is an error, please don't make people do the whole thing again. Save everything.
Yes.
There's nothing worse than doing that thing where you filled out a shit ton of information.
I'm off.
And there's one error and everything goes away. Yeah, you're going to leave at that point.
I'm off to the next one. It's a bit of frustration.
Unless you really need
Yeah.
whatever it is. So keep that in mind. No one likes that. And then, okay, so this is going to be our last main topic here, and that's usability and form factor. So the first thing there is optimize your entire site for mobile. Don't just do some of the pages. Make sure it's all good. Some pages may not need the total treatment. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, pick and like, if there's a limited budget, pick and choose your battles.
Yeah.
What I do is... So like I say, I always provide my developer with desktop and mobile views. Having said that, what I usually will do is if there's kind of a template or if I know what I've specified out on this one mobile view, my developer can look at all those styles and take it and apply it to the rest of the site, then that's fine. So I kind of give him the bare minimum for him to know what we're going for. But then there's some pages like the About Us page where there's not really anything to do other than just make the site, make the content easily digestible on mobile. So, but it should still be responsive no matter what. Don't make users pinch to zoom. That's never, you know what I mean? Like where that's what happens basically when you have a desktop site that's been just put on mobile. And now you have to pinch and you have to angle your phone the other way to kind of get a better view of it. Don't make people do that. So just make all text as legible as possible. If that means a bigger font size on mobile, do that. If it means images have to be bigger or go on its own line, you know what I mean? Like there'd be some page formats on desktop where there'll be the, I'm not being able to think of my words here for, you know, when you've got an image and then you've got the text that kind of goes to the side of it and then it'll fill out underneath.
Yeah.
The image may just have to be in its own space in that case. Third thing, make product images expandable. So always, you know, all they should have to do is just tap on the picture to get a larger view
of
it.
Again, go to Amazon user for experience. An example. They do it amazing.
Exactly.
You know?
Yep. Keep your user in a single browser window. Don't make them open up new windows. The only exception would be if it's an external link. I always recommend opening in a new window so that they stay on your site to some degree. And if you need the user's location serve any purpose. So like, let's say in that example of the form field where it knows where you are and it starts filling out your address. Usually in that case, it'll say, it'll come up with that little pop-up, you know, on your iOS just saying, hey, you need to turn on user location services.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure they know why.
Yeah.
Because some people will be quick to like, no, but you need to say like, if you turn it on, then it'll make it for an easier experience filling this out.
Perfect.
Yeah. So
I think that's a little bit of confidence feeling when you click that yes thing. You know, you want to know why they're asking for it, and it makes sense.
Totally.
It might make your experience a lot easier. So it's like that gamble.
Exactly. So so that's all I've got. So if you follow all those rules, you know, you'll have a pretty solid user experience on mobile. And your clients will sure appreciate it. And, you know, we're going in that direction more and more. It's becoming so important to be optimized for mobile. And Google does penalize sites if they're not mobile optimized. It's hard to say how much they penalize, you know, user experience type things. I feel like it's kind of more on the page load speed aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just knowing it's responsive. But
all this falls under
getting smarter.
This all falls under experience too, even just your satisfaction of it, your speed of it. Did you know? So all of it goes together. And I think these tips just really will help you kind of making sure you're doing your best foot forward on these, you know?
Exactly. And you want to increase those conversions for your clients because then you'll have a nice little case study for it and you know, you can charge more for your next client.
Exactly.
So All right. So we've got an audio listener question coming right up. But before we get to that, let's talk about some FreshBooks because we love them. Yeah. Mikkel, you love FreshBooks. I know that. Yes. So, you know, they just make it super easy to send invoices to your clients, you know, and you get paid quickly when you use it. We love that. So it's all new, rebuilt from the ground up, completely redesigned for the way you work. You know, we got to see the new interface. We've been using it, and it's really designer friendly, even more than the last one. And we love that you can create and send really professional looking invoices in just under 30 seconds. I can speak to that. I do it all the time, and I literally get in there and I'm out before I know it. So
yeah.
With two clicks, you can set yourself with FreshBooks online payments and end up with money in your pocket sooner. And with FreshBooks payments, over 60% of invoices are paid within one day. One day, I tell you.
It works. It works.
Oh, you sound like our YouTube listener.
I know. That's all. Yeah, but getting paid within one day is like huge in a world where,
oh my gosh, I wish like net 30 terms so seldom, but it totally does.
I know, but FreshBooks will improve your odds. So, and with the new projects feature, you can share files and messages with your clients, contractors, and employees. You know, all your conversations live in one place, which is awesome. And they got multi-currency invoicing for all you people that are dealing with people in other countries. And automated late payment reminders. What a godsend.
I still haven't used that, which I guess is a good thing.
Yeah, well, you haven't needed it.
Yeah, you got to. I do it all the time. Like whenever I do an invoice, I just I check that box saying, yes, please.
Yeah.
Please bug them.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to worry about it. It's not until, coming from you.
So it does that until you mark paid, right? That's how it works.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yep. And if you have any questions at all, they've got award-winning customer service, very friendly, very helpful, with no attitude, and a real life person answers in three rings or less. They're always there for you.
I would say two.
Because they're Canadians, and Canadians are just the nicest, don't you know? Yep. So we've worked out a 30-day unrestricted free trial with FreshBooks.com just for you, our listener. So go to FreshBooks.com/deeplygraphic. And enter Deeply Graphic Design in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Once again, FreshBooks.com/deeplygraphic. And then enter Deeply Graphic Design in the How Did You Hear About Us section and get 30 free days.
Damn.
You'll just love it.
And then you're on for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
And then you're on for the rest of your life.
They know how to get you with that little bit of crack. First one's free.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And you do it and you're like, gotta get me more of a taste.
Yeah, yeah.
And you keep coming back. So, but anyway. On to our listener question. We've got an audio one this time. Thank you for sending this one, Mimi B. That's Mimi B.
Mimi B. So, is he a new Spice Girl or something?
I think so. All right, roll that tape.
Hey guys, my name is Michelle, and I'm a graphic designer from Toronto. Okay, so my main bone to pick with graphic design is that basically, any Joe with seniority, like whether it's like a client or a manager, and they can basically tell you to make changes based on what they think works. So I'm looking to make the career switch from graphic design to UX and UI, because I feel like there's more definitive answers with UX and UI. Like, for example, like if a client tells you to change the call to action button to blue, and with A-B testing you already know red works better, you have the leg to stand on as to why red is a better choice. You know what I mean? So would you say that's the case with UX and UI, or am I just romanticizing a perfect career? Okay, thanks.
All right. Thank you, Mimi B. That was great. I actually really love this question.
Me too.
It's kind of a big reason why I'm doing things the way I'm doing them.
Right.
What do you guys think?
This totally speaks to your experience.
Yeah. What do you have to say about it, Mikkel? Do you think she's on the right track? Or
I would say that I'm extremely lucky because I do both, and they are absolutely different experiences from the service perspective with clients, for the very reason that she's talking about. It's what makes the two areas distinct.
Yeah. What do you think, Nick? Because I know you don't do any web. Is there an aspect of this that works in your business too, like in terms of just like research, and we know this works better than this. Yeah, so
my
listen to me.
I think if you are concerned of client pushback and them in general, you're in the wrong industry completely. I don't think changing from graphic design to just the UI UX. No, I want to be really real with her, because trust me, it's like this is going to happen anywhere you are, but. To make the percentage of that kind of relationship with the client less, regardless of what you do in the industry, you should be more proactive at the beginning and using all the same. If you're going to use data, like she said, saying you're going to click the blue button because blue is going to make a person feel, you know, and there's data behind that. You could say the same as far as what a person's going to purchase on a shelf. Or the entrance of a restaurant when they walk in.
There's usability nonetheless.
A lot of that stuff works, I think, because it's all about the subconscious and what person or what the consumer is thinking. So I would challenge her to say use that same stuff in whatever you feel.
That approach.
Because to me, it sounds like she was almost saying, I'm going to go there because I'm not going to get the pushback, but I'd rather be doing graphic design, not UI UX. Do what you love to do. That's going to be there anywhere. And it's up to you as a designer. Yeah. And I think to use a lot of what we've talked about in the last year is really being bigger than just a designer and knowing what that consumer is going to want regardless.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's the answer to her question is to run to another part of design. That's just my thought.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think the one thing that I'll kind of push back on you about a little bit is that it's not just about kind of pre-knowing from existing data. She did say, you know, these are all things you can test with a website.
Correct.
You can test them. You can do A/B tests. So that button thing again, like you can have a red button versus a blue button and you can test it.
Yes.
And if the red button is testing better than the blue button, then guess what, client? You know, the data don't lie. Versus it's much more costly to do those kind of tests. Like in your world, Nick, with packaging,
there's not
such a thing as, hey, we're going to do a run of this packaging that's in this color, and then we're going to split test it with this one. That would just be really
cost prohibitive. You know, but some of my clients have gone as far as doing, you know, test groups and we show with mockups and arranging them in planograms and asking them what they think. I know it's a little more time consuming and maybe even cost effective. But I think too, if let's say you've challenged the client and you said, the test show, the blue button works great. If that client is just that kind of a client, then they're going to move to, well, now we don't like the logo. Oh, it's too big or too small. I just don't think you're going to eliminate this to the point
sometimes
where she
you can't
was saying,
win no matter the,
and that's part the, of, the, that's just the, part of what we do. And I find that as the challenge. And I find that as the thing to really be have fun with sometimes too. So I don't, I just don't want her to think that she's going to eliminate that problem 100% moving to a whole different factor of UI UX.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
You know,
that's a good point.
I think it's not a magic. You bring up a great point
bean.
That testing is definitely a lot easier. I was just at a conference the other day and the designers of the Lyft app were talking about how much the users and the team, they get the betas and they use it. They get credit for Lyft to go out there and use it over and over and over again. And they can show exactly what is working and what's not. And I get that. And I admire that they get that instant, you know, kind of stuff. And who can argue against that? I get that too. But I'm trying to find ways in my area of design to that the client goes, if we agree to those things up front after we've done everything, hopefully that eliminates a lot of those change for change sake or their personal preference coming into play and not thinking of the persona of the person. So maybe it's just because a lot of that's fresh in my mind. My opinion is where I'm at, but I totally get what you're saying too. You know, you can't test it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a cool, cool feature.
It's nice to have in your back pocket data like that. But I would say also, like what you were saying, Nick, any project you start, make sure that you lay out the groundwork very early and often that this is not for you. Whenever you bring anything up in discovery or whatever, you're always talking about the end user. What can we do to make this a success in their eyes, something they're going to respond to? And the more you kind of hammer that over and over again, and you make sure that in the very beginning, the benchmark for success, you want them to say it in their own words. Like you want to make sure, okay, just so we're clear, the benchmark for success here is not that you, this website or this packaging gives you, the client, warm, fuzzy feelings. Mm-hmm. It's that it does something for your business.
Yeah.
So make sure that that expectation is met up front. And having said that, there will be certain people. You guys heard my story last week about the client I had to fire who just never got on board with that vision. Like I think he kind of knew that that was the important thing, but he never quite knew it.
Mm-hmm.
He still wanted things to look good for him. And that's just
so
a recipe
for
disaster.
Audience member vision. Yeah.
Yeah. So make sure your clients know up front that that's what the, or ask them, don't just tell them, say, what would make this project a success? And they're generally never going to say, I have to love it. They're going to usually say, it has to get me more business. So then you have to respond with, okay, perfect. It has to get you more business. That means that you may not love everything, but we have to ask ourselves in every decision we make, is this fulfilling that objective
mm-hmm.
or not?
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I'm still trying to break myself of this a little bit, would never ask your client, never put anything in the phrase of, let me know your thoughts on, like, how do you like this? That should never be the question.
Yeah, and I've made,
because that's,
man,
inviting
that's
subjectivity.
So smart, dude. And like, I got to admit, because I'm just practicing everything we've been really preaching over this last year with this new sense of kind of upfront stuff. And I've eliminated that completely. And
how do you phrase it? What do you say?
Oh, I just say, hey, take a look at this. It matches everything we've agreed upon. And sometimes what I'll do in my PDFs, because it's still so flat and presented in a way where it needs to be approved in that way, I will put call outs and lines pointing to specific areas and say, this emphasizes point one or pillar two or whatever it is. This is cool gray because we talked about it needing to look modern and clean and less of, you know, so call those points out. And then I still say this, I'll write it at the very end, let me know your thoughts. And then I hit the backspace and I'm like, nope, this is it.
Yeah.
And now you're more of the professional and the consultant rather than just the pixel pusher. So if we're going to, if we really want to change that conversation, you can't keep asking, you're right. You can't keep asking that. What do you guys think? Let me know your thoughts. That's just so engraved in how I sign off on an email.
Yeah. No, it's a bad habit that I think we all have. And I'm still trying to erase it from my vocabulary. Like, because you have to put that question a different way.
Exactly.
So it becomes not subjective anymore. It's not like, hey, how pretty do you think this is?
Do you like that new? Do you like this new green? No.
It
should be, you should have talked about that before to know that that answers all the questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. All right, cool. Well, thanks, Mimi. So keep sending in those listener questions to questions@thedeependdesign.com or via Twitter using #DGDC. And be like Mimi B and give us an audio question. We love that. All right. So, follow us on Instagram @deeplygraphic. Any other plugs you guys want to throw out, or you good? Ready for the weekend?
I'm ready.
Totally ready.
All right. Well, let's weekend then. With that in mind, keep designing. Catch us next time on the Deeply Graphic Designcast.